Today, as we continue working our way through the life of David, we're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 1 through 24. It is the entire chapter. I'm going to ask you to stand in just a few moments. We're going to talk about David and God's protection. Because of Saul's disobedience to the Lord, the God has rejected him as king over Israel, and God has chosen David to be the king instead. The prophet Samuel, he goes and he anoints David so that he can be the future king. Sometime after that, David kills Goliath. The armies of Israel, they rout the armies of the Philistines and they chase them all back to their own country, their own territory. And then Saul's son, Jonathan, he became a lifelong friend to David. And basically, he abdicated his right to the succession of his father's throne in favor of David, allowing David to do that. Meanwhile, Saul becomes extremely jealous of David, and for the rest of his life, Saul is trying to kill David. But God, in his marvelous providence, he protected David from Saul's numerous attempts to try to kill him. I'm going to ask you to stand as we read through our scripture. 1 Samuel chapter 19, beginning at verse 1. It says, Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Once more war broke out, and David went out and fought the Philistines. He struck them with such force that they fled before him. But an evil spirit from the Lord came on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. While David was playing the lyre, Saul tried to pin him to the wall with his spear, but David eluded him as Saul drove the spear into the wall. That night, David made good his escape. Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you'll be killed." So Michal let David down through a window, and he fled and escaped. Then Michal took an idol and laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment and putting some goat's hair at the head. When Saul sent the men to capture David, Michal said, "He is ill." Then Saul sent the men back to see David and told him, "Bring him up to me in his bed so that I may kill him." But when the men entered, there was the idol in the bed, and at the head was some goat's hair. Saul said to Michal, "Why did you deceive me like this and send my enemy away so that he escaped?" Michal told him, "He said to me, 'Let me get away. Why should I kill you?'" When David had fled and made his escape, he went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. Then he and Samuel went to Naoth and stayed there. Word came to Saul, "David is in Naoth at Ramah." So he sent men to capture him. But when they saw a group of prophets prophesying with Samuel standing there as their leader, the Spirit of God came on Saul's men, and they also prophesied. Saul was told about it, and he sent more men, and they prophesied too. Saul sent men a third time, and they also prophesied. Finally, he himself left for Ramah and went to the great cistern at Sekhu, and he asked, "Where are Samuel and David?" "Over in Naoth at Ramah," they said. So Saul went to Naoth at Ramah. But the Spirit of God came even on him, and he walked along prophesying until he came to Naoth. He stripped off his garments, and he too prophesied in Samuel's presence. He lay naked all that day and all that night. This is why people say, is Saul among the prophets? Thank you. May be seated, and may God bless the reading of his holy word. Now, question number 11 of the Westminster Shorter Catechism, it asks the question, what are God's works of providence? And the answer that is given to that question is God's works of providence are his most holy, wise, and powerful preserving and governing of all his creatures and all their actions. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Westminster Shorter Catechism or if you vaguely have heard anything of that. Or maybe you just wonder about God and his providential care over things. Perhaps we have been duped by those who tell us that when you become a Christian, then all of your troubles are going to go away and life is going to be a wonderful thing for us. But if you have been a Christian for any length of time, then you know that being a Christian does not mean a trouble-free life. One day, young David, he's minding his own business while he's watching his father's sheep there in Bethlehem. When he's summoned by the prophet Samuel, who anoints him as the next king over Israel, a short time later, David, he is conscripted into King Saul's service. Then it's not long before Saul becomes increasingly jealous of David, and he tries to kill him on several different occasions. And yet through all of those difficulties, through all of those struggles and that hardship, David entrusted himself into God's providential care. Now, as we mentioned earlier, God has rejected Saul as the king over Israel. He's chosen David to become the next king. But Saul, right now at this point in time, Saul is still the reigning king over Israel. David's reign has not yet begun. By setting himself against God's anointed, Saul was, in fact, opposing God himself. And as we work our way through this chapter this morning, I want us to see how God providentially saved David from Saul's attacks. The very first way he saved him is through Jonathan, who is Saul's son. See, the last time we saw or heard anything about Jonathan, he basically abdicated his right to rule over Israel as the next king. He privately commits himself to David as in a bond of covenant friendship. And that bond, it is about to be tested. Saul no longer secretly is trying to kill David. In fact, Saul told his son Jonathan and his attendants to go and to kill David. However, Saul doesn't know anything about Jonathan's covenant friendship with David. In fact, Scripture says, but Jonathan had taken a great liking to David. This friendship between Jonathan and David, it is deep. And it took precedence over being Saul's son. But instead of killing David, Jonathan tells David, my father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are, and I'll speak to him about you, and we'll tell him what I find out. Jonathan, he volunteers to be a go-between between David and his father Saul. By going to Saul and speaking to him on David's behalf, Jonathan was doing something very risky. He did not know how Saul would react to this plea for David, but he's willing to take the risk. And even more than that, Jonathan had thought carefully about what he is going to say to his father Saul. He said, let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his own hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel. And you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David? By killing him for no reason. See, Jonathan, he courageously says to his father that he would be sinning if he were to kill David without cause, without a good reason. And surprisingly enough, verse 6 says, Saul listened to Jonathan. In fact, Saul actually swears an oath. He says, as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So Jonathan, he calls David and he tells him all about the conversation. He brings him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. You see, here God used Jonathan to spare David from Saul. Saul was there, and Jonathan, he spoke boldly, and he spoke clearly to Saul that what he wanted to do was wrong, that it would have been a sin. The question for us this morning is, do we speak up when we notice sin or we notice some injustice taking place? There's a second way in which David was saved from Saul, and that was by illusion. We don't know how much time elapses between verse 7 and verse 8. It could have been days, it could have been months. But nevertheless, sooner or later, war breaks out again. And David is Saul's go-to commander to win this victory over the enemies of Israel. And David went out and he fought the Philistines, and he took them with such force that they fled before him. And David then returned to Saul. But an evil spirit from the Lord came on Saul. This is actually the third time where a harmful spirit from the Lord has afflicted Saul. And since the Lord is not the author of evil, he simply permitted this harmful spirit to come and to afflict Saul. And the harmful spirit came on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand while David was playing his musical instrument. And since Saul had previously tried to kill David with the spear, I'm sure David was there watching Saul, you know, keeping one eye on him, looking at him. And Saul tried to pin him again to the wall with his spear. But David eluded him as Saul drove the spear into the wall. And that night, David made good his escape. And David, after this moment, never again returned to Saul's court. For the rest of his life, David would be on the run from Saul, eluding his murderous intentions and all of his actions. You see, God, he providently protected David by enabling him to elude the spear that Saul had thrown at him. Now, we live in a culture where many are opposed to God and to the things of God. We need to be aware of their opposition to God and even their evil intentions toward God and the people of God. For example, if someone wants you to do something that is clearly in violation of God's law, elude that invitation. Get as far away from that as you can, just like David eluded Saul's spear and got away from him. But there's a third way that David was saved from Saul, and that is by his daughter, Michal. After eluding Saul's spear and fleeing from there, escaping in the night, David went to his own home. But Saul, he is still filled with these murderous intentions. And so he sent men over to David's house to watch, to wait, to kill him in the morning. Now, we're not told why Saul did not send his soldiers in that night to do it, to get David right then and there. Perhaps he was concerned about what people might think. But Michal, who is David's wife, somehow she knew what was going on. These guys outside the house waiting. Michal warned David, if you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed. Maybe Saul had sent word to her, thinking that she would be loyal to him. Or maybe she just knew what these watching messengers outside the house meant because she had actually grown up in Saul's house. But for whatever the reason, whatever the case, Michal lets David down through a window, and he fled, and he escaped. And then Michal, she took an idol, and she laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment, and then she put some goat hair up at the head. Now, the word there, idol, can also be translated as household god. Apparently, David's marriage to Michal, it was a mixed marriage, in that she did not worship the one true God of Israel. And A.W. Pink notes in his commentary, from a natural viewpoint, Michal's fidelity to her husband, it was commendable. But from a spiritual standpoint, her deceit and falsehood was reprehensible. It's worth noting that eventually David's marriage to Michal, it failed. Perhaps because Michal was not committed to the Lord as David was, because they were unevenly yoked. When Saul sent his men to capture David, Michal said, "He is ill." Then Saul sent the men back to see David and told him to bring him up with his bed so that Saul could kill him himself. But when the men entered the house, there was only this idol in the bed and this goat's hair. And Saul says to Michal, "Why did you deceive me like this and send my enemies away so that he escaped?" And she lied to her father that David had threatened her with death, which of course was not the case. David did not do that. And this time, God protected David from Saul by Saul's own daughter, Michal, even though she lied. See, God can use even lies to protect people. He used them to protect David. And if you think about the story of Rahab, Rahab lied to protect the spies that were there in Israel. Even though lying is morally wrong, the Bible simply records the lies of these people like Rahab and like Michal. Now, had they told the truth, God would have simply found another way to protect the Israelites and to protect David. But nevertheless, God was able to use their lies to protect them, and he used the lies to protect David. Finally, there's a fourth way in which David was saved from Saul, and that was by the Spirit of God. When David had fled and he made his escape, he went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. David went to Samuel because he knew that Samuel was a man of God. Now, interestingly enough, Ramah, it's only about 2 miles away from Saul's home, which is in Gibeah. So David, he's not hiding out very far from where Saul is. And then Samuel and David went to Naoth, and they stayed there. We don't know the exact location of Naoth. Most likely it's a suburb of Ramah. It was one of the names of a seminary that was similar. Elisha's school of the prophets was in that place. And what happens next? Maybe one of the strangest accounts of the Spirit of God in all of Scripture. Because word came to Saul that David is in Naoth of Ramah. So he sent them in to capture him. But when they saw a group of prophets prophesying with Samuel standing as their leader, the Spirit of God came on Saul's men, and they also prophesied. And Saul, he's told about it. And so he sends more men, and they prophesied. And then he sent men a third time, and they prophesied. 3 different times, Saul sends these messengers to go take David as captive, and 3 different times, all of these messengers begin to prophesy. Now, we don't really know what the nature of their prophecy was or how it took place or any of that other information. We just know that somehow the Spirit of God came upon them, and they were prophesying. And then finally, in frustration, Saul himself, he left for Ramah, and he went to the great cistern at Seku. And he asked, "So where are Samuel and David?" And they tell him, "Over in Naoth of Ramah." And then the Spirit of God came even on Saul. As he was walking along and he prophesied and he came to Naoth. Even more than that, the last verse says that he stripped off his garments. And he too prophesied in Samuel's presence. And he lay naked all that day and all that night. Saul, he was utterly humiliated by this experience. And the people of Israel, I'm sure they were mocking him when they say, "Is Saul also among the prophets?" Now, normally, in the Old Testament, when the Spirit of God came upon various individuals of different people, it came to equip them with power to perform or to speak for God, to speak God's will. However, in this instance, the Spirit of God did not give Saul or even his messengers power, but in fact actually robbed them of power, robbed them of what it was that they were going to do. And so in that way, God providentially protected David from Saul and the harm that he intended to cause to David. As we look at chapter 19 of 1 Samuel, we should learn to trust God in every circumstance because he cares for us. Even in our difficult circumstances, he is there and he will look after us. King Saul, he had become fiercely jealous and murderously opposed to David. Now, few of us will ever face opposition like David was facing. But nevertheless, if you find yourself in a difficult situation, you're going through trials or some hardships, as we look at David in this chapter, he modeled for us God's providential care, even in the most difficult circumstances. We would do well if we could learn from that. Truly believe that God is looking out after us. That God will care for us. Going back to the Westminster Shorter Catechism question, God's works of providence are his most holy, wise, and powerful preserving and governing of all his creatures and all their actions. Now, in his book, which is titled A Sweet and Bitter Providence, John Piper writes this about God's providence. He says, life is not a straight line, leading from one blessing to the next, and then finally to heaven. Life is a winding and troubled road, switchback after switchback. And the point of biblical stories like Joseph and Job and Esther and Ruth is to help us feel in our bones, not just in our heads, that God is for us in all these strange turns. See, God is not just showing up after the trouble comes and then trying to clean up all the pieces. God is plotting the course. He is managing the troubles with far-reaching purposes for our good and for the glory of Jesus Christ. You see, God is for us. Are you in a difficult situation right now? Are you facing some trials, some struggles? Let me urge you to trust God. Trust in his loving, providential care because God is for you. If you are following after God, if you are serving him and trusting Jesus, then God is for you. He is not against you.